You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
This week on Retronauts Micro, a microcomputer collection gets micro-sized. Everyone, welcome to another fine and scintillating episode of Retronauts Micro. I am Jeremy Parrish, and with me here is none other than the amazing, the one and only...
Binge Edwards.
Listen to that excitement. And yeah, Binge is here because he recently posted a tweet on Twitter, which is, you know, where one does such things as tweeting, talking about and showing off his extensive collection of personal computers, or... if you're one of those people who's still living in 1983 and think PC only means IBM compatible systems, his microcomputers. And it's quite an impressive array of systems, but unfortunately it's not going to be with Benj much longer, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's possible.
Would you care to elaborate?
No, you forced me to do this.
You seemed excited to be here, and now you're all like, whatever,
computers. Yeah, that's just part of the comedy routine.
Oh, okay.
I have been collecting computers since I was about 12 years old, and that's around 1993. And so 25 years now, I've been amassing a large collection of personal microcomputers, as Jeremy said, and also video game stuff, too. I have lots of consoles and stuff. But I was recently thinking about potentially moving to a different house, and I thought, hey, maybe it would be nice to move somewhere where I didn't have to have a gigantic two-car garage building to house all this stuff in a climate-controlled, you know, situation. And I thought, hey, maybe someone out there is actually interested in acquiring it now. So I put that tweet out there. I said something like, hey, does anybody want to buy a computer collection that I've been collecting since 1993? I'm thinking about downsizing. And it was retweeted 7,000 times or something.
Wow.
Which is a record for me.
That's a record for me.
Yeah.
I've never been retweeted that much.
And like 800 comments and lots of likes, however many that was, 5,000.
Well, the good thing is your ratio there is strong. It's not like 7,000 responses and 500 retweets. That'd be bad.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
but it definitely, I didn't realize it had blown up so much, but, you know, I saw it making the rounds for a few days and thought, you know, since you are here as a, you know, regular on Retronauts East, I thought it would be pretty cool for you to come in and talk about just the process of amassing these computers, why, you know, like why you've done it and why you are thinking about getting out of it. And, you know, what personal connection you have with some of these systems and so forth. So
yeah, I'd be happy to talk about all of that.
Yeah. It's the collecting aspect of classic video gaming and game history is something that, you know, we have talked about a few times, mostly in the context of like boy, it sure is expensive now. But this is different because you've been collecting these computers for like 25 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the time you were, I'm assuming, assimilating and accumulating and aggregating and agglomerating, these computers cost just a few bucks, some of them.
Yeah.
What's the best deal you've gotten on a vintage computer? Like the craziest, rarest thing that costs the least?
The best deal is probably when someone sent me a complete working Apple Lisa II for free.
Wow.
Including paying shipping.
I didn't even know there was a Lisa II. I didn't realize Lisa survived that long.
It did. They had the first model was 1983, and it had the dual Twiggy floppy drives that were problematic as far as reliability is concerned. And then in 84, they relaunched the Lisa at the time they launched the Macintosh with a 3.5-inch floppy, Sony-style floppy that was a lot more reliable. And I think they lowered the price, too, at the same time. Because
it was still insanely expensive.
Yeah, it was $10,000 in 1983, which is inflation that's $20,000, $30,000 now. I can't remember. Whatever it is. But it's a lot.
The Lisa's great because it's one of those things you can point to and say, like, no, Steve Jobs wasn't a complete infallible genius who never made a mistake. Like, that was his baby, and it was a mess. But it's crazy that you have one of those because they're not very common. I mean, they were a mess, so hardly anyone bought them. And the Macintosh came out at the same time and was a much more practical, much more affordable device. That was like $2,500.
Steve, you know, he instigated, I think, the Lisa program, but he was kicked off of it pretty early on. And
wasn't that named for his daughter, though?
Yeah, I think so. They, you know, there's people claim it is, and, you know, it's never been fully confirmed.
I've seen Michael Fassbender as Steve Jobs. I know what's up.
Yeah, I didn't see that one. I think I saw the one with Ashton Kutcher, however you pronounce his name. It was all right. It's the first time I've ever seen people I know in person in a film, like portrayed as actors. Like, I think Al Alcorn was in there as the guy who hired Steve Jobs at Atari, and, you know, Woz was in there, of course. And Woz has all kinds of stuff to say about that. Those films.
I'm sure. I bet.
He's not too happy about them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, we don't have to get too much into the Apple history. So,
you've done that already.
Yeah, I guess we have. And, you know, I should tell you about some of the response I've gotten from that.
Sure.
Tweet. We should have mentioned that, which is I've had museums around the world contacting me in America, in Europe, like Italy, even in Greece, the UK, Spain, Germany, all interested in the collection. And lots of individual collectors are interested in combining collections or some kind of weird thing like that. And universities starting
up new
programs.
What do you mean by combining collections? Well, like, I'm not going to give you any money, but if you give me some of your computers, I'll give you some of mine.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
It's like, surprising. Three people have said this.
The point is,
to
you
me.
Want to get rid of stuff.
They
so there's
stuff
like no appeal to taking on someone else's unwanted crap.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense. Three people have said something like, I will take your computers, combine them with mine, and then try to get rid of them. Or you can buy mine, and then you can get rid of yours. Or, you know, it's just, you know, it's not good logic. But, those aren't really serious considerations anyway. I talked to the Computer History Museum, who, of course, has most of everything I have, and I'm friendly with them very much. And they were interested in seeing if I had anything they didn't have, and I don't know if that's true. And the Strong was interested in potentially getting some stuff, and I'm friendly with them too. And the funny thing is everybody was kept – so these people got harassed like crazy, all my friends – and people I know like Jason Scott and Frank Cifaldi and, you know, these museums, they just got bombarded for 3 days straight with people saying, contact the Computer History Museum, contact Jason Scott, contact, you know,
right.
Hundreds of
everyone
times.
Everyone saying the same thing.
And Jason said, 15 people have DM'd me about your collection. You know, tell them to shut up.
Unfortunately, that's not how Twitter works. It doesn't work where people see the retraction. It's like the real news. You know, you get the retraction on page 6 after the headline. That, you know, gets everyone's attention. Yes, I didn't realize you've been bombarded so much, but you're
there's
like,
more.
You're in the news,
businesses,
right?
Businesses want to rent them out. Somebody wanted to
what?
Some company wants
because there's still businesses that are using like an OS2 based system, and they're like, oh, finally we can add some workstations to our office.
No, actually, I think they just want them as decorations. In fact, two of the publications I've written for, Macworld, I think, and PC Mag, both editors editors from those places said they considered trying to acquire it just to put it in their offices, like a wall of computers just for decoration because it's cool.
All right. I didn't realize they were in that much money, but okay.
Yeah.
Didn't they just lay off a ton of people?
They
were just assumed
they
like they acquired by a Chinese company and sacked their entire staff.
I'm not going to get into that because I like those people. That's
I do. Oh, I like baseball. The people who were there, but they're not there anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Macworld people were the greatest crew before they fired everybody a few years ago. I mean, those were some of the best editors on Earth. But I've got companies even locally considering doing some exhibit things with me, and I'm still trying to work that out. So I might not actually sell everything. I'm preferring to hopefully do something like an exhibit or maybe lease them to a company for a while and then maybe sell some of them or most of them. Or I don't know. There's a lot of options available now, which is what I'm excited about.
The important thing is to get them out of your garage.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice to, especially if someone helps me move them out is what I want the most.
Okay.
It took me 6 months to move them in.
You want a friend with
a
really big truck. Sorry, I've just got a Cooper Mini, so can't help you there.
Yeah. So I want, it took me 6 months to set everything up in there without breaking everything. Cause a lot of people don't realize how fragile these are mm-hmm. becoming, especially if they have plastic cases.
Right. Which gets really fragile.
Yeah. They're really brittle. And like the Macs, everybody loves the Macs the most, but they're actually in the worst shape because they're plastic and the plastic cracks. Now there are all these tabs that are supposed to be flexible tabs to open a case and they snap shut with friction and stuff. And those now, if you snap, if you pull them too far, if they've been in the wrong conditions, they'll crack straight off. And I've been losing a lot of pieces.
Well, a lot of those old systems have built-in CRTs also. And those, I feel like that's also just trouble right there.
CRTs aren't too bad. The capacitors is the worst part. Mm-hmm. All the Macs have these really poor quality capacitors that are leaking.
You think as much as they charge for those things, they would have used better materials.
Yeah, it's funny. So the Apple tax didn't go toward the materials.
it was just toward Steve's vacations.
Gravy. So the IBM's
tofu.
Everything IBM made still works. It's like they're built like a tank. It's incredible.
That was their thing was like
insane.
You're going to pay a lot of money for this, but it's going to last you forever.
Yeah, it will, and they do. In fact, I use a 1986 Model M keyboard. It's got the mechanical buckling spring action. Every day on my main computer, and it will never get old. It still acts like it was completely new, and I've been using it for 10 years straight already.
Man, I would love to have one of those instead of this MacBook keyboard.
Yeah, it's like
you drop a little bit of, like a tiny grain of dust gets in there, and all of a sudden the key doesn't work. I hate this thing. Great computer, but terrible keyboard.
Yeah, Apple makes some questionable design decisions sometimes.
But it looks pretty.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of like the overview of all of this. But how did you start accumulating computers in the first place? You said you started, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
So what was the first computer you decided, like, what was the first computer you decided to keep? And at what point did you say, I need more of these?
That's a very good question. I think what may have started it was when my dad bought me an Apple II Plus around 1990 because he wanted me to learn basic programming. And we go to this
around 1990.
Yeah, around 1990, and I was nine or so. And
were people still using BASIC back then? Or at
well,
that point,
he just
that always struck
me
as more of like an early, like late 70s, early 80s kind of thing.
Yeah, it wasn't a popular thing anymore at that time, really, for everybody to learn BASIC.
Just a way to kind of get you started.
He just wanted me to have some fundamentals going on because my brother had learned BASIC on the Atari 800, which we had kept those Ataris. For a long time. And I was interested in those. But the Apple II Plus, we got at what we call a Hamfest, which is this annual gathering of amateur radio operators. There's one in Raleigh every year where they have a swap meet flea market thing. And they have a lot of old tech there. And my dad saw that Apple II Plus there one time and said, hey, I should get this for you. It was $100 with some drives and books, instructional books. And I put that in my room and I learned to program BASIC on it, and it was really fun. And I probably was thinking, you know, how come the other kids don't have Apple IIs at the time?
Right. They were kind of at the end of their existence at that point. But
no,
I mean,
no kids had computers.
Prince of Persia had just debuted the year before that on Apple II. So there was still some life in the old girl.
Yeah, it wasn't totally dead. I mean, we still had a computer labs at school with Apple IIs in them at that time. And, but, you know, actually no computer, no, like I was saying, no kids really had computers at that time. Everything was shifting to IBM PCs and boring beige boxes. I was worried that if everybody was going to throw away the old computers, that they would forget about this history. And I thought that was important because I thought, man, these are cool machines. And there was so much variation and variety in computers in the early 80s when they were made by so many different companies with different incompatible platforms. And so I started, somehow I made some kind of that click where I just said, I should preserve these so they don't get tossed. Everybody doesn't throw everyone away. And someday I'll start the world's first computer museum. That's what I thought.
How does that going?
It's still in the works.
But I mean,
it's
you're
not
going to
be the first anymore.
It's probably not the first, but you're still kind of on track to actually make this crazy childhood dream happen, which is more than I can say for myself. I wanted to be a comic book artist. That's not happening.
Yeah, it goes to show how much support I've had from my family and my wife and you know, and my people around me that I could maintain this collection for so long. But it's also been, there have been a lot of trade-offs and sacrifices of trying to keep this stuff, so much stuff, and to keep it in reasonable shape. There's a time period at my last house where a lot of them spent time in an unheated, uncooled garage where in the beginning it got so humid that every time it got humid, there'd be mold on stuff, you know, it's growing on things. I lost a lot of manuals and stuff because of that, because it grows in there. And once it attaches, you can't really get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, luckily I've cleaned the moldy stuff and got rid of the moldy stuff. But it's a real challenge. You really have to climate control stuff, and they're sensitive to light, like the plastics discolor mm-hmm. and get brittle under UV light and sunlight. And so I had to put a dehumidifier in there. So right now they're in a climate controlled space totally, and that's it's a tricky thing to have that much climate controlled space, really.
Mm. So. But you've moved around a few times in 25 years, so you've had this collection tagging along behind you. And as we talked about in a, not you and I, but in a previous Retronauts episode, we talked about how the logistics of having to move is a real detriment to keeping physical possessions. And in fact, you're talking about moving now and liquidating your collection. So how much of a challenge has that been through the years?
It's been a real challenge. I think I've moved probably four times in the last, 15, 20 years. And, you know, at first everything was at my parents' house, and then I graduated from high school and I moved in with my brother, and we had a small house we rented together while we were both working. And the funny thing is, like, the first night we set up this house, we got this little tiny house, I set up a bunch of computers on the kitchen table, and my brother came in and was like, that didn't take long. You know, there's like an IBM PC Junior and an Apple IIc and stuff sitting there. But I was like, finally, I've got space to put stuff, you know. But soon that house, all the closets in the house were full of computers and video game stuff, including the laundry room. There were these shelves over the laundry room, and they were full of tubs of, you know, video game peripherals and stuff. And Jeremy's like, one time, that's my brother's name. Mm-hmm. And he's like, one time, just once, I'd like to use that shelf for laundry detergent or something, you know. But so, yeah, moving things, everything has a chance of breaking every time you move it, because the bigger computers are kind of heavy and fragile and awkward to carry and move around. And it's hard to pack them in such a way that you could stack other things on top of them without breaking. So you end up having to make 20, 30, 50 trips back and forth. I have a minivan, and I would shuttle them back and forth between houses a few at a time, whatever I could just set on the floor, because it couldn't stack up a lot of stuff. And that takes a long time. And things get broken a little bit. And so I don't like to move them too much anymore.
Right.
If I can help it.
So you mentioned that you got your start on this, doing all this with an Apple II Plus that your father got for you. Do you still have that computer? And
yeah,
you know, as something that will always, I'm assuming, remind you of him, are you planning to keep that particular computer?
Yeah, I will. If I do get rid of a majority of my collection, I'll probably keep my family computers, which is, you know, the most important things to me are the Atari 800, the Atari ST, the Apple II Plus, and the, you know, some of my early PCs that I used to run BBSs and things like that. And that'll be fine. Just enough for me to play with.
Crust fans, rejoice, because it's back. By popular demand, Little Caesar's large, soft pretzel crust pizza featuring a creamy cheddar cheese sauce, pepperoni, and a four cheese blend, surrounded by a delicious salted soft pretzel crust for just $6. Hot and ready every day between 4 and 8, and only $6 from the home of pretzel crust pizza, Little Caesar's.
Pizza, pizza. At participating locations plus tax.
It's April again, and you know what that means. Tucked in there, right between bad April Fool's jokes and soul-destroying payments to the IRS, you have a chance to come see Retronauts live in Milwaukee. Bob and I will be at Midwest Gaming Classic again this year, doing our Midwest Gaming Classic thing. MGC takes place at the Wisconsin Center in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, April 13th through 15th, and we'll be speaking live at 1 p.m. Saturday the 14th with a presentation called Atari Got a Raw Deal. Joining us to make a case that Atari was done dirty by the games industry will be Atari historian Kevin Bunch and Marty Goldberg, co-author of Atari Business is Fun. We'll also be having a social meetup Saturday night with our friends from Watch Out for Fireballs. And finally, if we can make it happen, we're going to attempt to set what may be a world record by hosting a 16-player Faceball 2000 match on Game Boy. I'll bring the games and 4-player adapters, you bring a system from the Game Boy family, and a link cable. All of this will be going down April 13th through 15th at the Wisconsin Center in Milwaukee. Keep an eye on Retronauts.com and the Retronauts Twitter and Facebook feeds for more details. See you there.
Hello, guys. It's MMA fighter Chael Sonnen. Check out my podcast, You're Welcome, with Chael Sonnen, every Wednesday and Friday right here at Podcast One. We cover the latest in mixed martial arts and everything else going on in the world of sport. Listen free to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen, exclusively available on Apple Podcasts, at podcast1.com, and on the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
To the heart of why we do things like this, because, you know, this is technology, it's objects, it's things, but on some level you are interested in them because they resonate with you on some personal level. Like, you know, I like writing about Game Boy and NES games and that sort of thing, and started up Retronauts because I'm like, oh yeah, these are like, these video games that we're talking about, they're things that I, you know, cherish because of the memories I have wrapped up in them and the experiences I've had, and I want to keep that alive.
Yeah, the nostalgia is important.
It's not even nostalgia. It's you know, like, nostalgia to me speaks of something sort of empty or, you know, superficial.
Really? Do you think of it as a negative word?
I think it has negative connotations. Like, it's pining for something that's gone, whereas... Yeah. What I'm talking about is something more like, this is, you know, this is
your heritage,
my heritage. And yeah, it's part of my identity.
Yeah.
There's a legacy
that's
wrapped up in
important.
This.
That's why our work resonates with people so much, because it's part of their formative identities. I like to say these are the ingredients of the recipe of a person that came together to make someone who they are. All the cultural media you consume as you're growing up and even up to the present. And yeah. It becomes your personal identity, you know, what you associate with, what you know.
Right.
You know.
I think with nostalgia, you get something like Ready Player One, where it's just like, hey, it's a thing I remember. But we're talking about something a little more substantial, more like, what is the legacy here? What's the heritage? Where did this come from? Why did it exist?
And there's
what's it about? How did it help make me who I am?
And it's not just that, though. I'm also casting a wider net and asking the question, how did this stuff make everybody how they are? It's a legacy of the, you know, of our generation. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to preserve all this stuff, is so people will know what the ingredients were that made us who we are. So in the future, people will know why we did the things we did, made the decisions we did.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another element to this collection, which is it's been a personal reference to me in a library when I had no possible way of having that anywhere else. It's not like there's a computer museum near here, and there's no library full of these old magazines and books I have. So as I have been writing about computer history and video game history, it's been an invaluable resource for me in that work, because I was exposed to all sorts of neat things that people need to remember, but I wouldn't otherwise if I didn't have those physical objects sitting in front of me.
So how many computers in total have you accumulated? How big is this collection?
I think right now, I was just looking at I keep this running list since about the year 2000 is when I first started putting it together, just to keep track of the actual systems and computers I have. I also keep track of the ones I discarded or got rid of or sold, because I need to, I can't remember what happened to what, if I still have it or not, because there are so many. And at its peak, I think I've had over 300 computers and 150 consoles, game consoles and stuff. But you have to keep in mind that every computer has its accessories and accoutrements, and they're you know, software, disks, printers, you know. So everything has extra boxes and boxes of stuff with all those 300 computers. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes it so huge. And I don't have those in a list. Everybody wants me to list them out, but man, that's going to take
a while.
And
I thought that was going to be like 70, 80 computers, 300.
Yeah, actually, I just looked at, I printed out that list before I came here. It says I have I used to separate them by non-IBM PC compatible computers, because when I started, I thought IBM PC stuff was really boring. So I separated them out. So
that's true, it is.
Non-IBM PC, 207 is the current count. Unique models is 160, so there's a bunch of doubles in there.
Okay.
And I've gotten
rid
of a lot of
doubles.
So do
you count like an Apple II versus an Apple IIe versus an Apple II Plus as separate models?
Yeah, those are unique machines.
Okay. So a lot of them, okay, yeah, so I see like Tandy TRS-80, different variants. Yeah,
Color Computer 1, I've got two of those. I've got two Color Computer 2s, two Color Computer 3s.
Okay.
Those are good candidates for downsizing.
So what were your criteria for acquiring systems? Like, what was the process you used? Was it pretty much just fair game? Like, if it was a computer from the past, it goes in the collection? Or were you looking for specific things at specific times?
I used to just take everything I could find a long time ago. My main way of getting the computers has changed over time. I think at first I went to yard sales and flea markets. And then I would get a lot of stuff at the Hamfest every year that I mentioned. And also, I went to some estate sales one time and found some neat stuff. I went to thrift stores every weekend around the year 2000. They still had computers back then. And that's when I could – there was one downtown, a Goodwill store, that was liquidating a bunch of Apple stuff. And I bought maybe like 5 or 6 Mac Pluses for a couple bucks a piece.
Wow.
At that time. And I used to have them. I got rid of all but one or two for space considerations about 10 years ago. And I wish I still had them, because then I needed to fix them up. At one point, I started writing for Macworld a whole lot and doing these vintage things. And they weren't as reliable as I thought they were, you know, once they got that old. And I needed to take pieces of the different computers and put them together to make a working one, you know. And so I wish I still had those, but I've had to make a lot of tough decisions about what to keep for space concerns.
Mm. assume it's pretty easy to track down American made and American sold computers, but how far have you delved into like European systems or Japanese systems? Do you have stuff like Sharp X1 or X68000 or things like that? Or has it pretty much been American systems?
The limitation has always been price. Mm-hmm. It's always been what I could get cheaply. So I was always focused on what was available locally. In fact, a lot of people gave me as soon as family and friends knew that I collected computers, they were all giving me their old stuff. Like, hey, I got this Atari in my attic, or I got a, you know, PC. And I have like everybody I know, everyone's family and friends of family, I have all their old PCs in my garage. And they'll come visit them. They'll be like, oh, that's the one I used in college. You know, I still got it, you know. Right. So I haven't had the budget or the money to go into those exotic things like the Japanese machines. I have a couple MSX computers. I think I have one, you know, I have an MSX. I think that may be the only Japanese computer I have. And then I have an American MSX, the CX5M by Yamaha, which is this neat synthesizer machine, music synthesizer computer thing. It's really cool.
That sounds amazing.
It has a FM synthesis built into it, and it's got a 60 key keyboard, you know, piano keyboard you plug into it and you can use it as a synthesizer and record sequences and stuff. It's really neat. And I got that when I was experimenting with music a long time ago. So, and European stuff, I don't know how many European things I have. Like I have a John Sands, Australian John Sands SC3000, the Sega
I've
computer.
Never even heard of that.
John Sands is like a Australian chain like Sears, I think. Huh, so they marketed the Sega products in Australia. And I got that a long time ago off eBay. And basically, it's just been too expensive to get into.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a budget collection from the start.
Right.
Like whatever I could get cheaply. Same with my video games. I mean, that's why one of the reasons I started collecting old video games is because it was cheaper to buy them used than new. You could get like an 80% discount if you wait a couple of years. Man, mm-hmm. I can wait. I'll still be the same game. I'll play it in 2 years and it'll cost a lot less. That's the way I used to think. So,
yeah. No, I mean, you know, when you're a kid on a budget, that's the way you have to think. I remember a lot of my NES games I would pick up at the local Hastings, which is a book, music, record, video store chain in Texas. And you know, after like 6 months, they would put out some pretty great games for less than half price. So I got stuff like Castlevania 3, Adventures of Lolo 2, like these really good games for $20 when they were still on the store shelves for 60.
Yeah.
So that was pretty, and you know, they would come into boxes and manuals and everything they, you know, never got put out on shelves because they just used the little, little printouts and stuff. So yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. And I just didn't stick with it. And you know, I've moved back and forth across the country from like Texas to
California,
New Jersey to Michigan to California to North Carolina. And, you know, within those places moved multiple times. Huh. So that's a lot of moves in the space of 15 years.
I couldn't do that. That's the sort of, you know, you sacrifice career opportunities and stuff if you have to stay in the same place. And
well, really, I was mostly moving because I was looking for career opportunities as opposed to like, oh, I found a job that needs me to move. It was more like, please don't hire me. Good times.
Yeah. Well, that just about wraps it. Just kidding. Do you have any other questions? I can't remember.
Yeah. I asked like, what was the best deal you got? But what would you say the most exotic computer is, the most interesting thing that you have in your collection?
You know, I think one of the coolest things I have right now to me is this Southwest Technical Products. They call them SWTPC PC.
It just rolls off the tongue.
It's a 6800 from 1975. It's the oldest computer I have. And it was one of the very first PCs, like in the Altair era, the kit. And it was sold as a kit and you had to assemble it. And we have a family friend who's since passed away, but he was a surgeon at Duke University, a research surgeon, and in 1975, he bought several of those machines to assemble to help him with his records at Duke or something. Mm-hmm. And so after he died, his widow, who's still a friendly friend, asked me to come look at their stuff because they have some old computers. And then I just hit a treasure trove of this very rare early PC stuff. I mean, he had not only this SWT PC 6800 assembled, but another one that's unassembled, and then the terminal they used with it, which was another product by the same company, which is rare, and a printer, this crazy printer that looks like a metal box with all these, you know, like impact hammers and stuff, just and ribbons just sticking out, you know, because it was just a low budget thing you built out of a kit. And all that was really neat. And I think it may have been the first PC used at Duke University ever. That's, you know, it's the odds are high, you know, really high.
So the unassembled one, do you still have that unassembled?
Yeah, I have it in a box.
That's, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So it's just like the raw kit, basically.
Yeah, it's just circuit boards, the PC boards plus the components and the instructions, you know.
That's so crazy.
So that's kits, you know, that's worth something. I don't know what exactly, but it's those are some of my neatest, you know, things. Mm-hmm. Plus, I love the Apple Lisa, you know. Especially, I had two Apple Lisas for a while, but I sold one really cheaply at the Hamfest about 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. Just so I didn't have to ship it anywhere, and I like to. It's sort of a community. We give back to each other. We sell each other the same things over and over again.
Right.
But people, you'll see the same object coming back around over
making
the years.
Making it circulating, Okay. So just finally, like, what happens when you let go of these? Are you going to continue to stalk whoever acquires them to make sure that they're giving them the proper love? Or will it just be like, okay, I'm done. Let's let it go.
Yeah, it's hard to let go. It's really hard because it has been a big part of my life for so long. I mean, for a majority of my life, essentially, because I'm going to be 37. So if I've been doing this for 25 years, you know, it is my life. And I will probably make sure, I just want to make sure they go to a good home that's respectful of the mission I've been pursuing, which is preserving, you know, cultural history of technology. And, you know, if they want to hire me to curate this stuff or something, that'll be fine too. As long as I don't have to move anywhere.
Right.
But now I can move because I don't have the computers. Okay, maybe
I'm sure your family's going to be like, sure, let's go, you know, play mother hen to your old computers that you got rid of.
Yeah.
They'd love that. All right. Well, thank you for coming on and talking about these computers that will someday soon not be yours.
Or they may be.
Or
I
maybe.
Mean, it's possible I might keep them for a while too. I'm not going to. I'm just testing the waters to see what the interest is, but I'm just really pleased that everyone is as interested in them as they are, you know, because they have meant a lot to me. It's been sort of a lonely pursuit keeping this collection for so long by myself that most people don't see. And I'm really glad everyone's trying to help me with it. And I appreciate that.
All right. So Benj, where can the humans find you on the internet?
On Twitter at Benj Edwards, B-E-N-J Edwards. And also I have a new podcast called The Culture of Tech at theCultureOfTech.com. And VintageComputing.com is my blog.
All right. And of course, I am Jeremy Parrish with the Retronauts, as usual, Retronauts.com, iTunes, Podcast One, etc. Look for us. It's Retronauts. And we're supported through Patreon, patreon.com/Retronauts. Yep. The usual. You can find me on Twitter as GameSpite. Even though I'm not really that spiteful about games, it's a fallacy. It's a lie. I apologize if you were coming to my Twitter account looking for cruelty. It's just not there to be found. Anyway, thanks again, Benj, and we'll be back on Monday with a proper Retronauts episode, and in 2 weeks with another mic.
Fans, rejoice because it's back. By popular demand, Little Caesar's large, soft pretzel crust pizza featuring a creamy cheddar cheese sauce, pepperoni, and a four cheese blend surrounded by a delicious salted soft pretzel crust for just $6. Hot and ready every day between 4 and 8 and only $6 from the home of pretzel crust pizza, Little Caesar's.
Pizza at participating locations plus tax.
The Mueller Report. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. President Trump was asked at the White House if Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation report should be released next week when he will be out of town.
I guess from what I understand, that will be totally up to the Attorney General.
Maine's Susan Collins says she would vote for a congressional resolution disapproving of President Trump's emergency declaration to build a border wall, becoming the first Republican senator to publicly back it. In New York, the wounded supervisor of a police detective killed by friendly fire was among the mourners attending his funeral. Detective Brian Simonson was killed as officers started shooting at a robbery suspect last week. Commissioner James O'Neill was among the speakers today at Simonson's funeral.
It's a tremendous weight to bear, knowing that your choices will directly affect the lives of others. But cops like Brian don't shy away from it. It's the very foundation of who they are and what they do.
The robbery suspect and a man police say acted as his lookout have been charged with murder. I'm Ed Donahue.